call the Subcommittee of Natural Resources to order March 2nd, 2015. We have SB 5528 before us, the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. This is actually the beginning of the hearings on the Park and Recreation Department. I'll first of all go to Linda Gilbert from the Legislative Fiscal Office.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is my first time in the Natural Resources Subcommittee this time, so I am Linda Gilbert from the Legislative Fiscal Office. On our agenda, we show Lisa Pearson with the Department of Administrative Services. However, just for today, we have Kathy Connolly from Department of Administrative Services. Your OLIS materials are the usuals, except I will point out that there are two agency presentations for parks. One is labeled expanded, and it's a more detailed version of the presentation that you're going to see today. There is a DAS presentation, the governor's budget, and the LFO presentation. And with respect to the LFO presentation, there are a couple of things I would point out. On the first page, there's a table, and it shows that in total funds, comparing current service level to the governor's budget is an 11% reduction. And going into more detail, in lottery funds, the reduction is, it's 10% reduction for lottery funds, a 14% reduction for other funds. More details will come on this later, but we presume it's not because the governor doesn't like parks. It's a revenue issue, both for lottery funds and for other funds. That concludes my opening remarks. Ms. Van Lannen.
Awesome.
Okay, please proceed.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, Co-Chair Stevlin, Rayfield, committee members, and Ms. Gilbert. For the record, I'm Lisa Van Lannen, the director at Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. They say that you get to say for the first year that you're new, and yesterday marks my one-year anniversary, so I'm happy to introduce myself as your newly old director. but I may use the new thing several times today. With me today is my deputy director, MG Devereaux. We're honored and excited to be here with you this morning, and we hope to help you gain a better understanding of our agency's portfolio and the great work we do to provide one of the best state park systems in the country. Our state park system consists of over 108,000 acres and over 250 state parks that are a variety of 53 overnight and a variety of day use and cultural, historical, and natural sites. Including all 363 miles of the Oregon coast, which is a special gem in itself. We're very proud of the fact that we serve more than 47 million visitors on an annual basis, and they continually report very positive feedback about their above average experiences with our system. We can thank the passionate leaders who came before us and their foresight to think ahead of their time. Our current administration reflects on and honors the past, taking the long view of how we'll care for the system for generations to come. We're very excited that we're embarking on our 100th anniversary here in the next 7 years, which really in your world translates to three budget cycles. So we're very excited about the opportunity to determine what actions will be necessary together to figure out how we want to create the system for the next 100 years. Throughout our budget presentation, we hope to excite you about the importance of the state park systems on the well-being of all Oregonians. By providing you a glimpse of the programs we provide and help you understand a little more about our portfolio, you'll also hear from some of our local recreation partners over the next couple days on some preliminary work we've started working smarter together and figuring out ways that we can tap into the unserved population and figure out how the next generation of users are going to want to use our system. So what you will see in our presentation, as Ms. Gilbert mentioned, is a reducing budget. And that's kind of due to the uncertainty of the lottery funds. They're flat or declining depending on which forecast you choose to look at. The other thing is the recreation vehicle registration fees have been declining for nearly a decade, so that's another warning sign for our system. What you won't see in this particular budget are policy option packages asking for fee increases or more revenue or more FTE. We're going to take this biennium kind of as a pause and reflect, and so we can actually figure out how we want to show up for the next 100 years. So we're using this as an opportunity to kind of look back and say how we invested over the last 50 years and where should we be making smarter investments for the future and be relevant and sustainable over time. We will, however, defer some development and maintenance projects. We'll reduce our acquisitions and take across-the-board cuts to ensure we focus on our frontline service so we don't lose that experience that we provide. And this will help us create a solid plan that takes into account the long view, the financial stability, and looking at how we can be relevant for the future. So with that, let's talk more about our high-level program. So the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department protects and provides outstanding natural, scenic, cultural, historic, and recreational sites for the enjoyment and education of present and future generations. And we do that through two main programs. And those programs, one is our direct service program, which is anchored by our state park system, which is, depending on which study you look at, one of the top five, number two or number four, depending on which way you want to slice it. And then our community supports and grant program, I don't think we talk about this one enough. This is where we serve many, if not all, Oregon communities with grants and expertise related to outdoor recreation. Our heritage services, and we also house the State Heritage Preservation Office within our department.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yes.
Real quick, on your mission statement, I believe I heard you say recreational, but I don't see that in your mission statement.
It's not directly in our mission statement, but we're Oregon Parks and Recreation Department, so it's kind of the balance of all. We have special places so we can provide that outdoor recreation. And recreation, depending on what user you are, means many different things.
I understand that, but...
And this is not our actual mission statement.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Please proceed.
Okay. Next one. Okay. The three other supporting programs that aid those two main programs are park development. Here we focus on development, maintenance, and improvement of the state park system, plus our acquisitions. Our central services, just like many other state agencies, serves every program in our department by providing accounting, budget, payroll, HR, information technology. We run our own park reservation system and our budget management. And then finally, the director's office leads these programs to execute directives. We have an Oregon State Parks and Recreation Commission, and we also manage the Human Resource General Communication and our research division. And as I mentioned earlier in our presentation today, I'll share with you our department goals, my big picture performance assessment of our public services after my first 1 year and 1 day as your director, then show you our high-level budget before speaking about some of the trends and issues that I see on the horizon. I'll turn you over then to MG, our deputy director, to walk you through our four of the five program areas, and then we'll discuss the director's office vision in more detail and recap some specific topics that we're facing in our very immediate future. So the agency pursues its mission through three broad goals that are expressed in the agency's Centennial Horizon, which I believe is in your appendix, and it really is about saving Oregon's special places. The park system we enjoy today is because of the foresight of yesterday. Policymakers, politicians, and other special Oregonians took very bold actions and protected priceless pieces of Oregon. Our job is to continue that legacy by maintaining and improving state parks and strategically acquiring only the highest priority places needed to complete the system. We want to make sure that we're being thoughtful about connecting people to meaningful experiences. We fulfill that mandate by providing the state-owned properties for recreation and by leading others to work cooperatively to meet Oregon's total recreation needs. Taking the long view, when we build and maintain parks, heritage areas, and facilities, we must balance the needs of today's recreation and tomorrow's health. Not only do we need to use environmentally sound, culturally sensitive methods of construction and maintenance to conserve resources, but we must also anticipate future costs to operate maintain our system for the next 100 years. These three goals are achieved by recruiting, retaining, and training our staff, our volunteers, and our partners to make sure we have the appropriate resources to do our job. This we kind of mentioned a little bit earlier, outdoor recreation. State parks feature natural and historic resources that have been developed just enough to serve families and casual, enthusiastic recreational needs. Clean and safe facilities are one of our areas we like to pride ourselves in. Friendly and professional staff and a strong core of volunteers have led high visitor satisfaction. Our constant feedback shows that 47 million visitors a year rate their experiences very highly. (Clears throat) Recreation and heritage expertise is available to all Oregon communities through the department's Community Support and Grants Program. Expert staff help communities find funding, design projects so they're more likely to earn local and regional support, and navigate state and federal laws as smoothly as possible. Since 1999, hundreds of recreation and heritage grants worth more than $100 million have been awarded to cities, counties, special districts, nonprofits, and other groups. And those funds come from Oregon Lottery, recreation vehicle license fees, federal pass-through dollars, and in the case of ATV, grants from the gas tax refunds. And so that's our local government grant program, where 12% of our dedicated lottery go directly into local government grant opportunities. The RV fees, 10% of our RV distribution goes right back to the community opportunity grant program. And then we have the land and water conservation fund program that we manage. And then we have recreation trails program, federal funding from Federal Highway Fund, and the ATV gas tax. So the state park system is relatively healthy, delivering not just 47 million visits a year, but a substantial side benefit, such as an estimated 800 million in local economic activity, affecting about 1,200,000 jobs and contributing nearly $900,000 in lodging tax revenue to the state, counties, and cities. Our heritage programs of different sorts reach every county and most individual communities. Heritage-focused travelers also spend an average of about $1,600 per trip, according to a recent study. The state park system is closing in on its 100th anniversary, hitting the century mark in 2022. It has grown moderately in the last 10 years, which came after 30 years of much slower progress. It just came out of that park a year for the last 10 years, if some of you are familiar with that. The budget you'll hear about over the next several days reflects our intent to maintain current services while evaluating options for expanding our future services without necessarily growing the system at the same pace as we saw in the last decade.
I did have one question. I understand your current situation in terms of wanting to take this biennium to refocus. Myself and former Senator Schrader, being probably amongst the chief advocates of expanding the park system and encouraging a former governor to go down the road of one new park, a year. I understand stepping back now, but I'm just wondering, from a long-term perspective, if you're going to take a look at this over the next biennium. Can't remember the current estimates, but my guess is over the next 20 years, we're anticipating about 1.5 million more people in the state, probably in the mid-range. Some of the parks are actually over-prescribed already.
Right.
Tourism is very important to the state, but so is having park sites available to Oregon residents. So, what are you going to do over the next 2 years to try to decide not just maintaining your existing, but how you're going to meet those needs in the future when you have 1.5 million more people in the state and you even have probably more tourism than you have now? Sort of a big question.
We can handle it. Senator Devlin, great question, and thank you for asking. So when we say we're going to pause and reflect, that doesn't mean we still don't have priorities. If the right things happen, so you have to take these opportunities and look at them as an opportunity, right? So, for example, rather than saying that we're going to go and acquire a bunch of places, maybe we can figure out how we can partner differently, and if there are priorities, we are going to go find those priorities. We're not going to miss an opportunity for something that is special to our system and that we'll actually bring. I think the pause piece is we also know that our system was built primarily in the 50s for the 50s, and the folks that are going to be using it after may not want the same services we provide. And so maybe it's enhancing the system we already have. Maybe it's expanding a park, or maybe it's renewing a park that we already have to be able to bring on capacity within the system we have. We have many parks that are underserved and aren't being utilized, and so we need to explore that to say, how could we partner different to provide those opportunities to folks who may want to recreate differently than they have in the past? We're seeing the trend with RV fees going down. If that's not where folks are going, how do we offer both of those services to accommodate current but create for the future? Does that help?
Yes.
Okay.
Just wanted to get, please proceed.
I don't want to miss an opportunity.
Yes.
I just want to say I appreciate that approach, and I think it's a smart one. I think it's good to, you know, if you have a system that was created in the 50s, things have changed. So I appreciate the fact that you're cognizant of new things coming, but that you're definitely taking a look at how you can do better, for, especially for the younger generation. It's a different group of folks coming up. So personally, I appreciate that you've got that approach. So I just wanted to say that.
I appreciate that. Representative Parrish, did you have something?
No.
Okay.
Please proceed.
It's a great opportunity, but it is also going to be a big challenge. Okay, so 2015-17 revenues are roughly in the same proportions as 13-15. We like to say internally, same budget, less money. other fund revenue is a bare majority of our fund mix, which is our day use and overnight. So we do recognize that that is kind of the bread and butter of our budget. So we do want to be cognizant that we're maintaining that, but yet still finding ways to represent that next generation and how they would like to recreate and still make revenue in some capacity. So that RV registration vehicles and park visitor revenue, though it also includes ATV gas tax refunds specific to that program. Lottery funds are constitutionally dedicated following ballot measures in 1998 and then again in 2010. Federal funds are mainly dedicated to heritage programs and grant programs for heritage and recreation. And so, you know, we were a division of ODOT back in the day, and so a lot of those fundings came with that. So it's time for us to look at how do we want to be funded differently and what revenue opportunities could we create. Good morning. Total revenues are down substantially from 13-15, mainly due to the departure of the Oregon State Fair and Exposition Center, as they were set up as a public corporation during the 2013 Legislative Assembly. An overall lottery fund is projected nearly flat after accounting for inflation, and other funds are down a couple of percent, and federal funds are down about 10%. Okay, expenditures. We've responded to a stagnant revenue and increasing labor by and supply costs by reducing the acquisition budget and some maintenance dedicated to more funds to our day-to-day operations and focusing in on service. I've challenged staff to look for ways to improve recreation services in ways that fulfill our mission more completely and earn more revenue and find opportunities to reduce bottlenecks to actually reduce and offset expenditures. We're doing away with across-the-board discounts for fall and winter and spring. I don't know if you're familiar with our discovery season. It was kind of built 15 or so years ago for discounting that shoulder season, and what we're finding from users is that they come no matter what, and so we're going to try to focus more direct marketing on the parks that folks are not actually utilizing. And so issues and opportunities. We're entering into an exciting time for our state park system. After nearly 100 years of growth and change, it's time to address the funding and social purpose of Oregon State Park and Heritage Systems to ensure its long-term sustainability. We can create value by broadening the reach of park and heritage systems, chiefly by learning how to create experiences that meet the needs of a very diverse population. During this will result in more earned revenue by serving a fuller spectrum of people. We'll build stronger relationships with Oregon communities so we can connect Oregonians to a more complete recreational experience, especially through the local parks. We can protect existing revenue streams and contain costs by avoiding new unfunded programs and balance repairs and improvements to existing parks against strategic, affordable, new acquisitions. This will involve looking at existing priorities and programs to determine their usefulness to Oregonians and deciding which can be prudent, trimmed, or dropped. Our goals for the future are protecting special places, delivering great experiences, taking the long view. We'll be refined as we work with our partners to set more specific goals for the next 3 to 5 years, which really is going to be that focus in on financial solvency and relevancy to what our users need and want. With all the stage setting, I'm going to turn you over to MG here so he can actually go through and share more detailed information about each of the programs and excite you there.
Chair Devlin, Chair Rayfield, members of the committee, my name is MG Devereaux, and I'm the Deputy Director of Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. The first area that I'll be talking about is what we call our direct services program. The direct services is the largest portion of our budget request and represents the primary service delivery that the state park offers for Oregonians and their visitors to the state park system. As Lisa mentioned, we serve over 47 million day visitors and almost 2.5 million overnight visits throughout the state. The Oregon State Park System is consistently ranked in the top 10 in the nation in a variety of measures, including the number of acres that we provide for visitors and the staff that we have to maintain those acres. Although our staff is biased, we certainly claim that we are the number one system in the nation. And this direct service component is a commitment that happens on a daily basis from our park staff at a wide variety of locations and activities throughout the state. We're not just a traditional campsite. We also offer a connection to Oregon's beauty through properties like Beaver Creek State Natural Area, where visitors can experience incredibly natural environments through a variety of activities like hiking and kayaking. We are staffed with enthusiastic professional staff that do more than maintain restrooms and trails, but actively engage people in interpretive programs and education, like this program at Nehalem Bay State Park, where we were able to take advantage of the discovery of a historic cannon on Arch Capes Beach and put together a school program for the local school children to learn about the history of the coast, as well as what the USS Shark meant to trade in the early part of Oregon's history. And finally, we protect the uniquely Oregon traditions like the 362-mile public ocean shore, which is one of the only one of its kind on the West Coast since 1913, where families are welcome to come enjoy Oregon's resources, connect with the ocean, and fly a kite. The budget for this area is derived primarily from three sources: our other funds, primarily our user fees, Measure 76 is lottery support, and a small percentage of federal funds. The budget has two large categories: the state park operations, which is the bulk of our budget for this piece at $91.6 million, which supports the staff and operations for management of 108,000 acres of property across the state. This not only includes the rangers that check our visitors in, clean our restrooms, check on campsites, but also includes the planning and the stewardship work that it goes to make sure that as park visitors enter through the gates of our parks, they have the opportunity to see the natural beauty that is hopefully free of invasives. It is planned strategically so that we know how recreation users use our sites to expand into other places of the state, and use that leverage of having a base of operations in a community to have an economic multiplier effect across the community. The second location inside this budget piece is what we call the special accounts. It's $6.2 million of dedicated funds that we're tracking for donations, interest earned, business endeavors, store operations, and a dedicated reinvestment account so that we can take care of some of the special facilities or machinery that's in our park that is reliant on to make sure that our facilities stay in good repair and we have maintenance dollars to continue operations at the primary level. The recreation benefit is a multiplier event for many of our communities. You may have seen some of the commercials for the Seven Wonders campaign that Travel Oregon did, and we were fortunate to have a couple of sites that were listed at that Seven Wonders, one of those being Smith Rock State Park, which was reported to our commission last year, had a tremendous impact on the local economy for visitors who were attracted to the hiking and climbing opportunities at Smith Rock, but were also then spending their local dollars in the towns around Smith Rock too for lodging, for gas, for food, for groceries. We never claim that this economic multiplier is the economic engine of some of our smaller communities, but it certainly does provide tangible benefits to the value of recreation in some of those places that allow for a community to have a whole host of different opportunities, not just for the residents, but also to serve the community members that come through those areas. There are several issues that we need to be mindful of in this area. Overall, our costs are driven by increases in visits, labor expenses, inflation, natural conditions like weather, and aging facilities that all require costly upkeep to maintain for their intended public services. As Senator Devlin mentioned earlier, we have some of parks that are at very high capacity, and in some cases, we are in danger of being loved to death. Some of our challenge is to make sure that we are staffed appropriately to do the routine maintenance on these facilities to ensure that they can handle that visitation load, but also that we can start to direct folks to parks that may not have the same level of visitation but offer a similar experience, and we can be prepared to offer those direct experiences to any visitor who shows through those doors. The visitors of Oregon State Parks play a significant role in funding the system through user charges. A poll of park users showed that 75% support small increases in rates to maintain services, and that number climbs to 84% when you only poll Oregon campers. As rates have increased from substantially below market to just about under average, campers have advised us very strongly that the rates should be raised in small increments more regularly, not a wild swing of a number of years before we can adjust for certain market conditions and to bring them in line with other states and other providers' averages. While there's no fee increase in our budget, it is often true that rates need to be adjusted up or down with the market on a more flexible schedule than just the budget process permits, which is one of those ideas that we'll be taking this next biennium to evaluate where our rates are and what other ways that we might be able to provide this body with solutions in other budget cycles in the future to talk about how state parks are funded to ensure direct services. We will also be working on executing the park system plan, which is included in one of the appendixes of your document. This will keep focus on the value generated for Oregonians from their state park system by containing costs, protecting revenue from diversion and lost growth. It will also be challenging to enact this plan's concept in a way that fulfills the legacy. The highlights of the park system plan are simply what we've been talking about today. With a suite of aging facilities throughout the system and high demand for recreational services in a current generation, but some concerns about where the future generations may line up for recreational needs, we need to make sure that the park system, the park properties that we maintain in the system are those that meet the current demands but are prepared for the future. We'll be looking at our planning work to determine how recreation visits may use some of our base, our parks as base of operations to enjoy other local communities, or as day trips that go out into communities through recreation like biking, like hiking, or other types of recreation activities that that connect different parks to each other throughout the state. After containing our costs, our focus on the upcoming biennium will be including earning more revenue by using discounts to a more targeted way to market our experience and to broaden our reach to underserved markets. We've realized through working with our partners and looking at our visitation that there is a gap in the visitors who currently use our facilities. We've missed a generation of park users, and we are in danger of completely missing the younger generation of park users as they start to choose other activities that may involve electronics, may have a higher emphasis on adventure sports, or may be more focused on single activity events instead of the traditional notion that the state park system is built on, such as camping or overnight experiences in a recreational vehicle. This is one of those areas that in the next year we'll be working, in the next 2 years, we'll be working very closely with our partners and some of our stakeholders to identify who those user groups are that we are not serving and in what ways we can offer a better experience for them to achieve our mission. At the same time, we do need to balance that. As we've indicated, the largest portion of our budget comes from the other funds associated with our user fees that primarily are camping dollars from recreational vehicles. We need to make sure that we serve those visitors well and we have a replacement stream for that revenue in the future if that is not the trend to move forward. We're also looking for other partnership opportunities to help deliver this direct service. In the 2013 session, we were able to, with your help, pass a piece of legislation, Senate Bill 196, that allowed us better rules for partnering with nonprofit organizations that may have similar missions but not exactly aligned with the state park system. Missions like the YMCA, the OMSI Natural Resource Center on the coast are two examples of partner organizations that we've started to have dialogue with about how do we use the mission of their organizations to connect kids and families to the outdoor recreation experiences that we have in Oregon.
We have a question from Senator Hansel.
MG, I'm looking at that third bullet there, trimming unneeded parks and programs a challenge. I certainly would, because I can't think of any parks in District 29 that are unneeded, so I wish you well in the other senatorial districts across the state. Just thought I'd put that in.
Co-Chair Devlin, Senator Hansel. That is a challenge for us. And the park system plan speaks to this element, not necessarily as wholesaling getting rid of these opportunities, but are there places that we can partner with other providers that may make more sense for those providers to provide recreation services at a location that is either far away from our main base of operation or has a recreation profile that may fit better for a county or a local operation. It is one of the challenges of maintaining such a large system at 255 parcels. There are some places that most people would drive by and say, why is this a state park? Yet each of our facilities has very strong constituents and advocacies that if we were to mention that this park is going to go away, I'm sure that the members of this committee, as well as some of your colleagues, would hear very quickly that that's the most important place in Oregon. So part of our challenge in the next 2 years is to identify ways that those facilities that make sense in somebody else's hand, or there's a better way that we can deliver those services, are positioned there to have a uniform understanding of what an experience might look like in those locations.
One thing, just as an aside, in my district, there's Mary S. Young Park, which is actually managed by the city of West Lynn, which is actually a fairly large park, but it's largely undeveloped other than the parking lots. And but then to the north of my district is the gem of the Oregon park system, Tryon Creek State Park.
You can see the challenges we're talking about.
Yeah.
You can feel
about the capital.
which I think the department should just actually keep as a gateway to state parks, actually, as a an experience, because it's in the center of the metropolitan region. But I did have a question about unneeded parks, because I don't know if there may be some rather unique small parks that are in particularly special areas, mm-hmm. but having some background in parks at the local and county level and regional level, I'm wondering if you have anything that's similar to I've spent most of the last 35 years in the city of Tualatin, and they have actually quite a few parks, and they expanded them quite a bit back in the 1980s. But they also, and some of them are fairly large for city parks, but they also have a few, or had a few, still have, I believe, parks that could fit in this room in terms of, and are more maintenance nuisance than actually a resource. And I'm wondering if the state park system actually has any of those. Any of those, like you picked up an acre and a half here. And if it's in a really unique circumstance, or it has some unique geological feature, some unique place on the coast, I fully understand that. But just over time, if you've acquired a few that just are hard to maintain and there really aren't very many visitors to.
Senator Devlin, thank you for the question. That is, I think, precisely what we're trying to accomplish with this bullet, is that there are isolated pieces of property that were either donated to the Park Department or were acquired under a different set of understandings about what the future may look like for that area. When we're evaluating those properties, we've got a pretty detailed analysis that gets done on those properties to ensure, first and foremost, that there isn't something special about that property that makes it unique for our natural resource concerns or makes it a vital part of a larger program that we're trying to develop from a recreation standpoint, that it might be a linkage in the future. However, there are some places that, as you mentioned, might be considered either property that doesn't contribute to the mission or doesn't have a direct line of sight to the next level of where our experiences are. So part of this next 2 years is consulting with our region managers and also the constituents around those areas to determine if there are those pieces there, what is the best way for us to resolve some of those maintenance concerns on those properties. As you know, we are an offshoot of the Highway Department and ODOT, and so some of the original pieces of property that came to us may have been planned for for large rest areas or waysides on highways that never really materialized as major transportation corridors, or their sole function really is as a transportation element, not necessarily a park and recreation environment. One of those places is very close to this building, and that's what's known as Holman Wayside on Highway 22 on the way out to the coast. It is inside, for all imports and parts, for all intents and purposes, the city limits of the city of Salem. The recreation that it provides is not one that benefits the larger elements of the Oregon State Park system, but it's too small to really develop as another larger piece of a recreation provider for either West Salem or one of the counties. So that would be one of those areas that we would look for partners to see if it makes sense for a land trade, a different types of management, or a different way that we can deliver service at that park that is not so expensive.
Representative Gomberg.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Thank you, Ms. Van Lannen and Mr. Devereaux, for being here today. I wanted to go back to something you touched on briefly, but I really think is the biggest piece of news here and the biggest challenge in coming years to state parks, and that was the report to us of future current younger generations, future generations, and changing uses of our state park system, which brings to mind for me the fact that we're experiencing a lot of people that want to use our parks in what I would call non-traditional ways, and some permit requests that we've used to address that. I'm wondering, what are we doing to address this long-term challenge of engaging future generations in the historic treasure that our parks entail, whether it be internet service in our park areas, changing beach and park usage? What's the game plan for addressing this challenge?
Go ahead.
Co-Chair, Representative Gomberg. So there are a number of ways that we're looking at that challenge of who's not in our parks and how we attract them better. Technology is one of those key items. We know that the younger generation will experience nature but want a better connection with the technology that they use in their everyday life. And part of that then means an infrastructure upgrade to make sure that we can have that technological component that works inside of a park. That's not, in all of our cases, a very cheap opportunity to run a dedicated service line from here all the way to the heart of Silver Falls State Park or to some of our further parks that are on the east side that may not have that same level of cell phone coverage or other types of coverage. So we're looking at how we partner then with local providers who may already have an interest in having a wireless facility somewhere near there that we can use not only as a revenue offset, but also as a way to engage visitors in that standpoint. That becomes a balancing act for us, as many of our current visitors like to use our facilities to get away from it all, if you will, and don't want the distractions of a cell phone or a laptop or other technologies. So part of the conversation that we are having with the visitors is, what is the desired level of experience at different parks? Too often we've taken a broad brush approach to all of our parks and made a one-size-fits-all solution, which doesn't always work in each and every case. There are parks that probably will always remain offline simply because they are in areas that the availability of technology to connect them to the larger world of the internet is not something that's capable at this point in time. And those parks will be those places that folks can unplug and go to those places of rest and respite. However, there are parks that there are ways to deliver that technological connection that might provide at least a bubble of connectivity around some of our major campsites or around visitor stations so that people can still have that element to check in. Representative Gomberg, you also mentioned the notion of how we attract other uses in a non-traditional way. And that has been a very long conversation in the department's history about the balance between a publicly funded resource and the availability of commercial activities inside of the park environment, and how to make sure that we are appropriately charging folks for the use, potentially exclusive use of some of our facilities, but also looking at ways that we can offer revenue offsetting experiences for some of our other visitors. Part of the work that we're doing is to reach out to other states who have a longer history or perhaps different view of where concessionaire relationships or permit relationships live inside of our system to make sure that we can provide customer service to those folks who would like to use our parks in that way and ensure that there's a revenue stream back to the park that is not a burden for those folks who like to use it in that manner.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm Representative Heck.
Thank you, Chair. So we're hearing a lot about the outreach and you want to expand your market, but there's a lot of conversation, it sounds, that's happening within the department and your thoughts within the department. But what are you going to do to talk to the folks that are actually using the parks, meaning the patrons of the state of Oregon? So are you going to hold focus groups? Are you going to survey? Are you going to... What are your plans to reach out to the people that are actually using the parks to find out what it is that they want? I mean, I understand and I get what you're saying about talking to other states and you're talking internally, but where's the voice of those that are actually out there and how are you going to get that information? Because they're your stakeholders.
Senator Devlin, Representative Hack, great question. Thank you for the entry into that conversation. So as we mentioned earlier, these are kind of the beginnings of conversations. Those plans are not solid at this particular point. We're not the first, which is the beauty of this, right? Every state park system in the country and probably every local level is having the same dialogues. Other state agencies, I mean, this isn't a new dialogue for any of us. The beauty is we can learn from others and what they've already done. Hopefully we'll create examples of going forward. But some of the concepts, we have 7 initiatives. We got all of our managers together here in December, and we came up with 7 initiatives, and the biggest one being inclusiveness and how do we actually go out and engage that next generation. So ideas of we're meeting informally next month to create our strategic planning effort. But some of the ideas have been maybe like a youth advisory commission or council where we go and grab kids of a certain age, maybe it's 15 to 25, and we say, if you could use our parks, what would that look like? The stuff we're hearing now is, you know, could it be fun runs? Could it be color runs? Could it be more mountain bike trails? Could it be more trails rather than the traditional parks that we have, we've used in the past? And what we have learned from users is, and even some of you, as folks don't know the difference between a city, state, special district, county, or a state park, they go to recre and they know it's a park. And so we need to be partnering with those other park and recreation providers to say, how do we provide this greater broad connection to recreation and overall health and well-being in the state of Oregon? So we have not engaged with those users yet. With that, you will be seeing, I believe on Wednesday, one of our users who is of that younger demographic who came to us and said, hey, I want to be able to have the opportunity to record a song in one of your parks. And from there, we've created a second-year partnership, and we're looking forward to yet a third-year partnership with a younger demographic that is using our park for a much different recreational opportunity. So now it's that, how do we take that next level and try to figure out how we engage with those folks? That will be surveys, that will be outreach, that will be through our visitor surveys. We'll do all of those traditional things we've always done, and hopefully this next generation will say, in addition to that, would you try this too? Because we don't know, we've never done, so.
And I don't mean to be critical of
no.
that. I love where you're headed, and I think you're definitely headed down the right direction. I'm just trying to wrap my head around, it's a huge task, and so, I'm very appreciative of the work, and I did watch the video and listen to the song, and I'm so excited for him to come here because that right there is the start of something with the younger generations that we've needed for a really long time. So I love where you're headed.
And Senator Devlin, Representative Hack, I appreciate that. Like I said, this is a 3 to 5 year conversation, and we're going to hit nuggets along the way, and it'll be somewhat accidental, but it'll be thoughtful on the way.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
When you mentioned that gem of a park in the northern reaches of your district, I was reminded that somehow I got onto the mailing list and solicitation list of the Friends of Tryon Creek State Park.
Made a donation.
Yes, I did. I think it was a Christmas present for someone that has... kept me in the loop ever since. But that does remind me, how common a practice is that for sort of philanthropic foundations to be set up to support a particular park. You know, Tryon Creek, I can see some benefit because it doesn't have camping, I don't think. You know, it doesn't generate revenues that way. So I'm just wondering about that model, how common it is.
And Senator Devlin, Senator Denbrough, so we have 16 registered friends groups across the state that have achieved a level of support that involves a 501c3 status, and they have a very clear mission and connection to a park. And each of those 16 really have a different feel and flavor for why they want to be involved in that park. The Friends of Tryon Creek obviously have a mission that they want to connect people to the natural resources of that location. The Friends of Collier State Park, with our facility down near Klamath Falls, have a rich connection to the logging history of that area and have raised an incredible amount of resources to make sure that the outdoor museum and the interpretive exhibits that are there are ones that support the larger story of what Collier State Park are. In addition to those 501c3 groups, we also have a relationship with the Oregon State Park Foundation that provides, which we believe you'll be hearing from their board chair on Wednesday, which provides a different level of connection to Oregonians and some of the larger directions that the state park system may have. And if I could touch back on Representative Heck's question for a second and tie those two together, those are one of the places that we hear very clearly from not just our users, but also other people that are involved in the state park system who come to us with ideas about ways that they may be able to support. You don't have to be part of a friends group to have a relationship with our parks other than a user group. We have adopt-a-park locations, we have adopt-a-trail, we have volunteer opportunities that we offer for Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, service organizations, where we're constantly reaching out to connect those folks to an experience that also benefits the state park system. One of the things, if you take the time to look at the park system plan, you will see is that over that 108,000 acres that we maintain for the state of Oregon and the state park system, there is a high amount of maintenance that contributes to each of those 108,000 acres. We are currently positioned in a place that we have the full-time equivalency to conduct about 60% of the routine maintenance for those park facilities. So when we pride ourselves on the look and feel of those parks, one of the ways that we're able to close that gap between 60 and about 80% is using other folks that have interest and passion for their park system to help deliver some levels of service, either through interpretive programs, education programs, or volunteer cleanups for some of our properties to help make that connection, but also help contribute to the state park system as we'd like it to be for the future.
An additional question? Please proceed.
So the next area that we'll be talking about is the park development program. And while the direct services component focuses on the needs of today's visitor, the park development focuses on the needs and preparation for our future visitors. The park development program prepares Oregon State Park System for sustainable operations and growth in the face of the changing societal needs, increasing expenses, and decreasing state resources. The program defines success through improvements in design and engineering technologies to enhance efficiency, major maintenance, and enhancement of parks and facilities, and strategic, thoughtful park acquisitions. As many of you know, when Measure 66 was passed in 1998, it was to take care of a very large deferred maintenance backlog that had grown over the time that the state park system had been separated from the highway department and had lost the funding source of gas tax for the support of those facilities. An increasing reliance of general fund in those areas made it increasingly difficult for us to provide that direct service that we're proud of, but also maintain the long-term investment into those facilities. And so this program really focuses on several areas to make sure that we are positioned correctly. The first is property acquisition, and while it is a lesser focus from the standpoint of a dollar commitment of only $1.1 million, it's responsible for the negotiation purchase of new park properties to keep pace with the changes in Oregon's demographics, recreational habits, and conservation priorities, as well as this portion of the budget allows us to focus on those key acquisitions that might serve a location that we've had as the potential for a new recreation site or expand our services at a park location that is currently at capacity in terms of its use. The challenge here for us is to allow us to focus on that in a systematic way and in ways for us to develop partnerships to acquire the best of what we can with this resource while preparing for what the future needs might be. The largest portion of this budget item is the facility investment program at $20.1 million. And this really addresses the needs for long-term facility investment in park infrastructure by making repairs to the deferred maintenance list, improving and expanding parks to meet future needs, and applying value-added facility designs that use long life and efficient features and techniques. The park experience is often simply referred to as just a campsite. And I challenge folks to remind them that that campsite in many of our larger parks is connected to a larger infrastructure, just like the cities and towns that you all live in and represent. We have sewer and water systems that connect to that campsite. We have electrical systems that connect to that campsite, roadways, natural areas and features, and infrastructure of staff to help support the experience through rule enforcement, education opportunities, and the day-to-day management of the 47 million visitors that come through the system. So in that sense, we are challenged to make sure that those facilities that we have are maintained in a way that can represent the best of what the facilities have to offer in the future and capture on facilities and capture the best efficiencies. For example, we have facilities that, while not identified originally in 1998 as having a maintenance backlog, in that time period, new challenges have emerged. Where the system in 1998 may have been state of the art at the time, but now is showing wear and age or interesting issues like concrete piping underneath the ground that starts to infiltrate water, which increases the amount of electricity that we need for some of our pumps to handle that capacity. And replacing that pipe with newer system over time will not only be beneficial for the life expectancy of the water and sewer system that's there, but will also have a measure on reducing costs for our utility systems as well. The issues in this area are that program costs are driven by the real estate market, visitor expectations, and increasing costs to repair or replace facilities built in the last 90 years. A substantial number of the facilities that we own and manage were designed 50 years ago to serve a fraction of the members who currently enjoy the state park system. Of the approximately 1,900 structures in the state park system, 26 of them would take almost $1 million or more to replace, and nearly 1 in 10 is more than 70 years old, and nearly 50 are more than 100 years old. As the system ages, the risk of critical failures increase, and the complexity of maintaining and managing historic structures are one that only adds a level of coordination with ourselves in some respects to the State Historic Preservation Office, but also making sure that the historic resources, whether it's the historic Wolf Creek Inn or the facility at the Kamauchung Museum in Eastern Oregon, are maintained in a way that reflects the best in historic maintenance and management, but also tells that story for future generation. We've had a lot of discussion about acquisition so far, and I will conclude that that section by indicating that our goal here is to leverage acquisitions through as many partnerships and priority opportunities as we can with the funds that are identified. It's an investment strategy that has been adopted by the State Park and Recreation Commission and really reflects the notion that there are still some key places that we'd like to keep our eyes on so that when the time is right, we can leverage those partners. We have a recent success to celebrate, which is the acquisition of the Belts property on the coast, which has been on an acquisition watch list for the department for almost three decades as a place that would benefit the Oregon State Park System from acquisition, and we were never able to find the right mix of an asking price from a willing seller as well as partners to make that happen. About a year ago, all things worked out, and we had a partner that was able to negotiate a sale from the owner, who then held it for us as we had the time to get our commission to approve that purchase. Again, one of those opportunities that if we had tried to use previous levels of acquisition dollars, we probably would have paid at least four times for that property value, and we were able to get it with inside the budget that we currently had.
Okay. At this point, I'm actually going to, you only have about 12 pages left of your presentation, and then we'll have the DAS statement tomorrow, or BAM. I always still call it BAM.
So do we.
And actually, I believe a commissioner is going to be here, so that's probably about an hour and 10 minutes tomorrow. And then we have public hearing on Wednesday. Are there any additional questions at this time? If not, if with your acceptance, we will conclude for today, and we'll restart at 8:30 tomorrow morning. Ha ha ha.